Chapter 17. An Arrival. Chasing after prophecy, Moiraine had decided by the end of the first month, involved very little adventure and a great deal of boredom. Now, 3 months out of Tar Valon, her grand search consisted mainly of frustration. The three oaths still made her skin feel too tight, and now saddle soreness added to the mix. The wind rattled the closed shutters against their latches, and she shifted on the hard wooden chair, hiding impatience behind a sip of honeyless tea. In Candor, comforts were kept to a minimum in a house of mourning. She would not have been overly surprised to see frost on the leaf-carved furniture or the steel-cased clock above the cold hearth.
"It was all so strange, my lady,"
Jerrine Najima sighed, and for the 10th time hugged her daughters to her fiercely, as though she would never release them. They seemed to find some comfort in the crushing grip. Perhaps 13 or 14, standing on either side of Jerrine's chair, Kolar and Asella had her long black hair and large blue eyes still full of loss. Their mother's eyes seemed big, too, in a face shrunken by tragedy, and her plain gray dress appeared made for a larger woman.
"Joseph was always careful with lanterns in the stable," she went on, "and he never allowed any kind of open flame. The boys must have carried little Jared out to see their father at his work, and—"
Another hollow sigh.
"They were all trapped. How could the whole stable be ablaze so fast? It makes no sense."
"Little is ever senseless, Mistress Najima," Moiraine said soothingly, setting her cup on the small table at her elbow. She felt sympathy, but the woman had begun repeating herself.
"We cannot always see the reason, yet we can take some comfort in knowing there is one. The wheel of time weaves us into the pattern as it wills, but the pattern is the work of the light."
Hearing herself, she suppressed a wince. Those words required dignity and weight her youth failed to supply. For a moment she wished for the agelessness, but the last thing she could afford was to have the name Aes Sedai attached to her visit. No sister had come calling on Jerrine yet, but one would sooner or later.
"As you say, my Lady Alice," the other woman murmured politely, though an unguarded shift of pale eyes spoke her thoughts.
This outlander was a foolish child, noble or not. The small blue stone of the Kessiera dangling onto Moiraine's forehead and one of Tamura's riding dresses in dark green upheld her supposed rank. People allowed questions from a noble they never would from a commoner, and accepted odd behavior as natural. Supposedly she was making sympathy calls in mourning for her own king. Not that many people seemed to be mourning laymen in Cairhien itself. The latest news she had from there, a month old, spoke of 4 houses laying claim to the throne, and fierce skirmishes, some approaching battles. Light, how many would die before that was settled? There would have been deaths had she gone along with the hall. The succession to the Sun Throne was always contested, whether through open warfare or assassination and kidnapping, but at least she had been gone long enough to put paid to that. And she would pay for doing so, atop whatever Sierran imposed for disobedience. Perhaps she let something of her anger show, and Mistress Najima took it to mean her own thoughts had been too clear, because she started up again, speaking anxiously. No one wanted to anger a noble, even an outland noble.
"It's just that Joseph was always so lucky, my Lady Alice. Everyone spoke of it. They said if Joseph Najima fell down a hole, there'd be opals at the bottom. When he answered the Lady Karail's call to go fight the Aiel, I worried, but he never took a scratch. When camp fever struck, it never touched us or the children. Joseph gained the lady's favor without trying. Then it seemed the light truly did shine on us. Jared was born safe and whole, and the war ended, all in a matter of days. And when we came home to Canluam, the lady gave us the livery stable for Joseph's service, and...
She swallowed tears she would not shed. Kolar began to weep, and her mother pulled her closer, whispering comfort. Moiraine rose. More repetition. There was nothing here for her. Jerrine stood, too, not a tall woman, yet almost a hand taller than she. Either of the girls could look her in the eyes.
Forcing herself to take time, she murmured more condolences and tried to press a wash-leather purse on the woman as the girls brought her fur-lined cloak and gloves. A small purse. In the beginning, instinct had made her generous, even with the bounty to come, if not already received. But before long, she would need to find a bank. The woman's stiff-necked refusal to take the purse irritated her. No, she understood pride. And besides, Lady Carail had provided. The presence of a clock spoke of a prosperous household. The real irritant was her own desire to be gone. During Najima had lost her husband and 3 sons in 1 fiery morning, but her Jared had been born in the wrong place by almost 20 miles. Moiraine disliked feeling relief in connection with the death of an infant, yet she did. The dead boy was not the one she sought. Outside, under a gray sky, she gathered her cloak tightly. Anyone who went about the streets of Canluim with an open cloak would draw stares. Any outlander, at least, unless clearly Aes Sedai. Besides, not allowing the cold to touch you did not make you entirely unaware of it. How these people could call this new spring without a hint of mockery was beyond her. Mentally, she drew a line through the name of Jurin Najima. Other names in the notebook residing in her belt pouch already had real lines inked through them. The mothers of 5 boys born in the wrong place or on the wrong day. The mothers of 3 girls. Her initial optimism that she would be the one to find the boy child had faded to a faint hope. The book contained hundreds of names. Surely one of Tamra's searchers would locate him first. Still, she intended to go on. Years might pass before it was safe for her to return to Tar Valon. A great many years. Despite the near-freezing wind that gusted over the rooftops, the winding streets were packed with milling people and carts and wagons, and hawkers with their trays or barrows. Wagon drivers shouted and cracked their long whips to gain some headway, the women coming nearer to striking flesh than the men, and so managed to move in straight lines. But for her, it was a matter of picking her way, dodging around wagons and high-wheeled carts. She was certainly not the only outlander afoot in the streets. A Taraboner with heavy mustaches pushed past her, muttering a hasty apology, and an olive-skinned Altaran woman who scowled at her, then a smiling Ilianer with a beard that left his upper lip bare, a very pretty fellow and not too tall. A dark-faced Tyran in a striped cloak, even prettier, eyed her up and down and pursed his lips in betrayal of lascivious thoughts. He even moved as though to speak to her, but she let the wind catch one side of her cloak, flinging it open long enough to reveal the slashes on her breast. That sent him scurrying. He might have been willing to approach a merchant with his beautiful face and lewd suggestions, but a noble was another matter. Not everyone was forced to crawl. 2 times she saw Aes Sedai strolling through the crowds, and those who recognized the ageless face leaped out of their paths and hastily warned others to move aside, so they walked in pools of open space that flowed along the street with them. Neither was a woman she had met, but she kept her head down and stayed to the other side of the street, far enough that they could not sense her ability. Perhaps she should put on a veil. A stout woman brushed by, features blurred behind lace. Sierran Vayu herself could have passed unrecognized at 10 feet in one of those. She shivered at the thought, ridiculous as it was. The inn where she had a small room was called the Gates of Heaven, 4 sprawling stories of green-roofed stone, Canluim's best and largest. Nearby shops, jewelers and goldsmiths, silversmiths and seamstresses catered to the lord and ladies on the stand, looming behind the inn. She would not have stopped in it had she known who else was staying there before paying for her room. There was not another room to be found in the city, but a hayloft would have been preferable. Taking a deep breath, she hurried inside. Neither the sudden warmth from fires on 4 large hearths nor the good smells from the kitchens eased her tight shoulders. The common room was large, and every table beneath the bright red ceiling beams was taken. The customers were plainly dressed merchants for the most part, bargaining in low voices over wine,
and a sprinkling of well-to-do craftsfolk with rich embroidery covering colorful coats or dresses. She hardly noticed them. No fewer than 5 sisters were staying at the gates of heaven, none known to her from the tower, the light be thanked, and all sat in the common room when she walked in. Master Helvin, the innkeeper, would always make room for an Aes Sedai, even when he had to force other patrons to double up. The sisters kept to themselves, barely acknowledging one another, and people who might not have recognized an Aes Sedai on sight knew them now, knew enough not to intrude. Every other table was jammed, yet where any man sat with an Aes Sedai, it was her warder, a hard-eyed man with a dangerous look about him, however ordinary he might seem otherwise. One of the sisters sitting alone was a Red, a fact known only through an overheard comment. Only Phelana Bevane, a slim yellow-haired brown in plain dark woolens, wore her shawl. She had been the first to corner Moiraine when she arrived. They had felt her ability as soon as she came close, of course. Tucking her gloves behind her belt and folding her cloak over her arm, she started toward the stone stairs at the back of the room. Not too quickly, but not dawdling either. Looking straight ahead, the sister's eyes following her seemed the touch of fingers. Not quite grasping, none spoke to her. They thought her a wilder, a woman who had learned to channel on her own. That lucky deception had come about by accident, a misperception on Phelana's part, but it was bolstered by the presence of a true wilder at the inn. No one knew what Mistress Asher was, except the sisters. Many Aes Sedai disliked wilders, considering them a loss to the tower, yet few went out of their way to make their lives difficult. A merchant in dark gray wool, who wore only a red enameled circle pin for jewelry, Mistress Asher dropped her eyes whenever a sister glanced at her, but they had no interest in her. Her gray hair ensured that. Then, just as Moiraine reached the staircase, a woman did speak behind her. "Well now, this is a surprise." Turning quickly, Moiraine kept her face smooth with an effort as she made a brief curtsy suitable from a minor noblewoman to an Aes Sedai. To 2 Aes Sedai. Short of Ciaran herself, she could hardly have encountered 2 worse than this pair in sober silks. The white wings in Lorella Tarsi's long hair emphasized her serene, copper-skinned elegance. She had taught Moiraine in several classes, as both novice and accepted, and she had a way of asking the last question you wanted to hear. Worse, the other was Marian. Seeing them together was a surprise. She had not thought they particularly liked one another. Lorella was as strong as Marian, requiring deference, but they were outside the tower now. They had no right to interfere with whatever she might be doing here. Yet if either said the wrong thing here, word that Moiraine Damodred was wandering about in disguise would spread with the sisters in the room, and it would reach the wrong ears as surely as peaches were poison. That was the way of the world. A summons back to Tarvalen would find her soon after. Disobeying the Ammerlin seat once was bad enough. Twice, and very likely sisters would be sent to bring her back. She opened her mouth, hoping to forestall the chance, but someone else spoke first. "No need trying that one," Phelana said, twisting around on her bench at a nearby table where she was sitting alone. She had been writing intently in a small leather-bound book, and there was an ink stain on the tip of her nose, of all places. "Says she has no interest in going to the tower. Stubborn as stone about it. Secretive, too. You would think we'd have heard about a wilder popping up even in a lesser Kyrianan house, but this child likes to keep to herself." Lorella and Marian looked at Moiraine, Lorella arching a thin eyebrow, Marian apparently trying to suppress a smile. "It is quite true, Aes Sedai," Moiraine said carefully, relieved that someone else had laid a foundation. "I have no desire to enroll as a novice, and I will not." Phelana fixed her with considering eyes, but she still spoke to the others. "Says she's 22, but that rule has been bent a time or two. A woman says she's 18, and that's how she's enrolled. Unless it's too obvious a lie, anyway. And this girl could easily pass for—"
Our rules were not made to be broken, Larella said sharply. And Marian added in a wry voice, I don't believe this young woman will lie about her age. She doesn't want to be a novice, Phelana. Let her go her way. Moiraine almost let out a relieved sigh. Enough weaker than they to accept being cut off, Phelana still began to rise, plainly meaning to continue the argument. Halfway to her feet, she glanced up the stairs behind Moiraine. Her eyes widened, and abruptly she sat down again, focusing on her writing as if nothing in the world existed beyond her book. Marian and Larella gathered their shawls, gray fringe and blue, swaying. They looked eager to be elsewhere. They looked as though their feet had been nailed to the floor.
So this girl does not want to be a novice, said a woman's voice from the stairs.
A voice Moiraine had heard only once, 2 years ago, and would never forget. A number of women were stronger than she, but only one could be as much stronger as this one. Unwillingly, she looked over her shoulder. Nearly black eyes studied her from beneath a bun of iron-gray hair decorated with golden ornaments, stars and birds, crescent moons and fish. Cadswain, too, wore her shawl, fringed in green.
In my opinion, girl, she said dryly, you could profit from 10 years in white.
Everyone had believed Cadswain Maladrin dead somewhere in retirement until she reappeared at the start of the Aiel War, and a good many sisters probably wished her truly in her grave. Cadswain was a legend, a most uncomfortable thing to have alive and staring at you. Half the tales about her came close to impossibility, while the rest were beyond it, even among those that had proof. A long-ago king of Tarabon winkled out of his palace when it was learned he could channel, carried to Tarvalen to be gentled, while an army that did not believe chased after to attempt rescue. A king of Arad-Doman and a queen of Saldea both kidnapped, spirited away in secrecy, and when Cadswain finally released them, a war that had seemed certain simply faded away. It was said she bent tower law where it suited her, flouted custom, went her own way, and often dragged others with her.
I thank the Aes Sedai for her concern, Moiraine began, then trailed off under that stare. Not a hard stare, simply implacable. Supposedly even Ammerlins had stepped warily around Cadswain over the years. It was whispered that she had actually assaulted an Ammerlin once. Impossible, of course. She would have been executed. Moiraine swallowed and tried to start over, only to find she wanted to swallow again. Descending the stair, Cadswain told Marian and Larella,
"Bring the girl."
Without a second glance, she glided across the common room. Merchants and craftsfolk looked at her, some openly, some from the corner of an eye, and warders, too, but every sister kept her gaze on her table. Marian's face tightened, and Larella sighed extravagantly, yet they prodded Moiraine after the bobbing golden ornaments. She had no choice but to go. At least Cadswain could not be one of the women Tamra had called in. She had not returned to Tarvalen since that visit at the beginning of the war. The Green Sister led them to one of the inn's private sitting rooms, where a fire blazed on the black stone hearth and silver lamps hung along the red wall panels. A tall pitcher stood near the fire to keep warm, and a lacquered tray on a small carved table held silver cups. Marian and Larella took two of the brightly cushioned chairs, but when Moiraine put her cloak on a chair and started to sit, Cadswain pointed to a spot in front of the other sisters.
"Stand there, child," she said.
Fighting down a searing flare of temper, Moiraine made an effort not to clutch her skirt in fists. Even a woman as strong as Cadswain had no right to order her here. Yet under that remorseless gaze she stood as directed. Quivering with outrage, she struggled not to utter words she would regret, but she did it. There was something of Swan about this woman, only magnified. Swan had been born to lead. Cadswain had been born to command. She circled the three of them slowly, once,
twice. Marian and Lorella exchanged wondering frowns, and Lorella opened her mouth, but after one look at Cadswain, closed it again. They assumed smooth-faced serenity. Any watcher would have thought they knew exactly what was going on. Sometimes Cadswain glanced at them, but the greater part of her attention stayed on Moiraine.
"Most new sisters," the legendary Green said abruptly, "hardly remove their shawls to sleep or bathe, but here you are without shawl or ring in one of the most dangerous spots you could choose, short of the Blight itself. Why?"
Moiraine blinked.
"A direct question."
The woman really did ignore custom when it suited her. She made her voice light. "New sisters also seek a warder. Why was the woman singling her out in this manner?"
"I have not bonded mine yet. I am told bordermen make fine warders."
The Green sent her a stabbing look that made her wish she had been just a little less light. Stopping behind Lorella, Cadswain laid a hand on her shoulder.
"What do you know of this child?"
Every girl in Lorella's classes had thought her the perfect sister and been intimidated by that cool consideration. They all had been afraid of her and wanted to be her.
"Moiraine was studious and a quick learner," she said thoughtfully. "She and Swan Sanche were two of the quickest the tower has ever seen, but you must know that. Let me see. She was rather too free with her opinions and her temper until we settled her down, as much as we did settle her. She and the Sanche girl had a continuing fondness for pranks, but they both passed for accepted on the first try. She needs seasoning, of course, yet she may make something of herself."
Cadswain moved behind Marian, asking the same question, adding,
"A fondness for pranks," Lorella said. "A troublesome child?"
Marian shook her head with a smile.
"Not troublesome, really. High-spirited. None of the tricks Moiraine played were mean, but they were plentiful. Novice and accepted, she was sent to my study more often than any three other girls, except for her pillow friend Swan. Of course, pillow friends frequently get into tangles together, but with those two, one was never sent to me without the other. The last time, the very night after passing for the shawl."
Her smile faded into a frown, very much like the one she had worn that night. Not angry, but rather disbelieving of the mischief young women could get up to, and a touch amused by it.
"Instead of spending the night in contemplation, they tried to sneak mice into a sister's bed, Elida Arroyhan, and were caught. I doubt any other women have been raised eyes to die while still too tender to sit from their last visit to the mistress of novices."
Moiraine kept her face smooth, kept her hands from knotting into fists, but she could do nothing about burning cheeks. That ruefully amused frown, as if she were still accepted. She needed seasoning, did she? Well, perhaps she did, some, but still. And spreading out all these intimacies.
"I think you know all of me that you need to know," she told Cadswain stiffly. How close she and Swan had been was no one's business but theirs. And their punishments, details of their punishments. "If you are quite satisfied, I must pack my things. I am departing for Chuchin."
She swallowed a groan before it could form. She still let her tongue go too free when her temper was up. If Marian or Lorella was part of the search, they must have at least part of the list in her little book, including Jurine Najima here, the Lady Ines Demain in Chuchin, and Avin Sahira, who lived in a village on the high road between Chuchin and Canluam. To strengthen suspicion, all she need do now was say she intended to spend time in Arafel and Shinar next.
Cadswain smiled, not at all pleasantly. "You'll leave when I say, child. Be silent till you're spoken to. That pitcher should hold spiced wine. Pour for us."
Moiraine quivered. Child! She was no longer a novice. The woman could not order her coming and going, or her tongue. But she did not protest. She walked to the hearth, stalked, really, and picked up the long-necked silver pitcher.
"You seem very interested in this young woman, Kedswain," Marian said, turning slightly to watch Moiraine pour. "Is there something about her we should know?"
Lorella's smile held a touch of mockery. Only a touch with Kedswain.
"Has someone foretold she'll be Amarlin one day?
I can't say that I see it in her, but then I don't have the foretelling." "I might live another 30 years," Kedswain said, putting out a hand for the cup Moiraine offered. "Or only 3. Who can say?"
Moiraine's eyes went wide, and she slopped hot wine over her own wrist. Marian gaped, and Lorella looked as though she had been struck in the forehead with a stone.
"A little more care with the other cups," the Green said, unperturbed by all the gaping.
"Child?"
Moiraine returned to the hearth still staring, and Kedswain went on.
"Malin is considerably older. When she and I are gone, that leaves Corrine the strongest."
Lorella flinched. Did the woman mean to violate every custom all in one go?
"Am I disturbing you?"
Cadswain's solicitous tone could not have been more false, and she did not wait for an answer.
"Holding our silence about age doesn't keep people from knowing we live longer than they. Faw! From Corrine, it's a sharp drop to the next 5. 5 once this child and the Sanche girl reach their potential. And one of those is as old as I am and in retirement to boot."
"Is there some point to this?" Marian asked, sounding a little sick.
Lorella pressed her hands against her middle, her face gray. They barely glanced at the wine Moiraine offered before gesturing it away, and she kept the cup, though she did not think she could swallow a mouthful. Kedswain scowled, a fearsome sight.
"No one has come to the tower in 1,000 years who could match me. No one to match Malin or Corrine in almost 600. 1,000 years ago, there would have been 50 sisters or more who stood higher than this child. In 100 years, though, she'll stand in the first rank. Oh, someone stronger may be found in that time, but there won't be 50, and there may be none. We dwindle."
Moiraine's ears pricked. Did Kedswain have some solution to the problem? But how could any solution involve her?
"I don't understand," Lorella said sharply. She seemed to have gathered herself, and to be angry for her previous weakness. "We are all aware of the issue, but what does Moiraine have to do with it?
Do you think she can somehow attract more girls to the tower? Girls with stronger potential?"
She had to force that last out, grimacing in disgust, and her snort said what she thought of the notion.
"I would regret her being wasted before she knows up from down. The tower can't afford to lose her out of her own ignorance. Look at her, a pretty little doll of a Kyrian noble."
Kedswain put a finger under Moiraine's chin, tilting it up.
"Before you find a warder like that child, a brigand who wants to see what's in your purse will put an arrow through your heart. A footpad who'd faint at the sight of a sister in her sleep will crack your head, and you'll wake at the back of an alley minus your gold and maybe more. I suspect you'll want to take as much care choosing your first man as you do your first warder."
Moiraine jerked back, spluttered with indignation. First her and Swan, now this. There were things one talked about, and things one did not. Kedswain ignored her outrage. Calmly sipping her wine, she turned back to the others.
"Until she does find a warder to guard her back, it might be best to protect her from her own enthusiasm. You two are going to Chachin, I believe. She'll travel with you, then. I expect you not to let her out of your sight."
Moiraine found her tongue, but her protests did as much good as her indignation had. Marian and Lorella objected, too, just as vociferously. Aes Sedai did not need looking after, no matter how new. They had interests of their own to look after. They did not make clear what those were, or whether they were shared between them. Few sisters would have, but plainly neither wanted company. Kedswain paid no attention to anything she did not want to hear, assumed they would do as she wished, pressed wherever they offered an opening. Soon the pair were twisting on their chairs and reduced to saying that they had encountered each other only the day before and were not sure they would be traveling on together. In any event, both meant to spend 2 or 3 days in Canlewham, while Moiraine wanted to leave today.
"The child will stay until you leave," Cadswain said briskly.
"Good. That's done, then. I'm sure you two want to see to whatever brought you to Canlewham. I won't keep you."
Lorella shifted her shawl irritably at the abrupt dismissal, then stalked out, muttering that Moiraine would regret it if she got underfoot or slowed her reaching Chachin. Marian took it better, saying she would look after Moiraine like a daughter, though her smile hardly looked pleased. When they were gone, Moiraine stared at Cadswain incredulously. She had never seen anything like it, except an avalanche, once. The thing to do now was keep silent until she had a chance to leave without Cadswain or the others seeing. Much the wisest thing. "I agreed to nothing," she said coolly, very coolly. "What if I have affairs in Chachin that will not wait? What if I do not choose to wait here 2 or 3 days?" Perhaps she did need to learn to school her tongue a little more. Cadswain had been looking thoughtfully at the door that had closed behind Marian and Lorella, but she turned a piercing gaze on Moiraine.
"You've worn the shawl only 4 months or so, and you have affairs that cannot wait? Faugh! You still haven't learned the first real lesson, that the shawl means you are ready to truly begin learning. The second lesson is caution. I know better than most how hard that is to find when you're young and have Sidar at your fingertips and the world at your feet. As you think."
Moiraine tried to fit a word in, but she might as well have stood in front of that avalanche.
"You will take great risks in your life if you live long enough. You already take more than you know. Heed carefully what I say, and do as I say. I will check your bed tonight, and if you are not in it, I will find you and make you weep as you did for those mice. You can dry your tears afterward on that shawl you believe makes you invincible. It does not."
Staring as the door closed behind Cadswain, Moiraine suddenly realized she still held the cup of wine and gulped it dry. The woman was formidable. Custom forbade physical violence against another sister, but Cadswain had not sidestepped a hair in her threat. She had said it right out. So by the three oaths she meant it exactly. Incredible. Was it happenstance that she had mentioned Malin Arganya and Karine Nagashi? They were two of Tamra's searchers. Could Cadswain be another? Either way, she had very neatly cut Moiraine out of the hunt for the next week or more. If she actually went with Marian and Lorella, at least. But why only a week? If the woman was part of the search, if Cadswain knew about her and Swan, if... Standing there, fiddling with an empty wine cup, was getting her nowhere. She snatched up her cloak.